Hey folks, Luke here. Let me just let you down right off the bat and tell you that this is not a new Vengeance episode. I'm sorry to disappoint. I'm sure you got excited when you saw something in this feed. I am coming to you today to announce the launch of a new show that I'm making. It's a music show called Signals and Bridges, and it explores the area of library music, which is like stock music or production music, it's sometimes called. Basically pre-recorded music that was organized into catalogs that were sent to like ad agencies, TV studios, that sort of thing. And when you hear a term like stock music, you might think that it's like bad or, you know, second rate. And that is somewhat true, but there are some very, I think, important exceptions to that rule. There's some really interesting and innovative stuff. And the careers of the people who made this music are very interesting to me. So anyway, this show is just kind of an exploration into that world. And episode one just launched. So I wanted to present it here and invite you to enjoy it here if you like, or head over to the show itself and subscribe. I'm going to be doing this show every couple weeks, I think. So you can search Signals and Bridges in your podcatcher of choice. It may not turn up right away. This is very fresh. It just went up last night. Sometimes those searches take a while, like the database or whatever, it takes a while to refresh. So yeah, Signals ampersand Bridges. I'll put a link to the show in the show notes, but I'm also going to present it here. So as a reminder, there will be two more episodes of Vengeance coming your way sometime this year. We're going to explore, I guess I can give you a little preview. We're going to explore what happens to Gebetto after he falls into the terrifying churning mass of rock at the top of Mount Arduous. It's a two-session game that we called Gebetto's Bits, which was a funny thing someone said at some point in the campaign. So you have that to look forward to. But for now, please enjoy episode one of Signals and Bridges. Talk to you soon. This is Signals and Bridges. I'm Luke Brevoort, and this is Klaus Weiss. Well, welcome to Signals and Bridges, an exploration of library music and the people that made it. I'm Luke Brevoort, and I am so excited to be making this show. I've had the idea for this show for a couple of years now. I've always had other projects that took precedence, but I finally managed to carve out some time to embark on this journey, and I'm so glad you're here for episode one. I think we are going to discover some wonderful things together. So let's talk about it. So library music, if you're not familiar, it's also sometimes called production music or stock music. Just like it sounds, it's music that was ready to go when people need it. So if you're an ad agency, you're filming a commercial, and you need a two-minute track that is upbeat or whatever vibe you're going for, there are these companies, these music libraries, that would probably have already sent to you a catalog or a library of pre-recorded music, often organized by mood or instrumentation, that kind of thing. You find the track that suits your project, you pay to license just that track, kind of a la carte situation, and boom, you're in business. So that is a sort of business model. The music library has been around since at least like 1927, from what I'm seeing in my tiny bit of research I've done so far, and it's still a model that exists today. And what is so interesting to me is that, why is some of it good? I mean, obviously people were trying to do a good job, but when you hear the term stock music, you might think, oh, that's probably a bad thing. It's probably like an imitation of popular sounds, or it's second rate, or it's the leftovers from other more serious projects. And having listened to a lot of this stuff now, you're mostly right if you're thinking that most of it is pretty bad, actually. Oh, bad feels mean. I guess like flyover territory sounds more diplomatic. But there are these gems, and they are more frequent than you might expect in this area. And it's almost like the library model was a way to make sort of experimental stuff or experiment with new gear that was becoming available in the period that we'll be covering, which is mostly, by the way, 1970 to 1990. We may go a little earlier, might go a little later, but that's mostly what we're focusing on. So anyway, I'm just so curious about who were these people who were making this music and essentially flinging it into the void, not knowing whether it would get licensed at all, or if it did, where, you know, you don't know where it's going to end up. So it's just such an interesting thing where people were seemingly being innovative, but they kind of don't know where that music is going. So anyway, that is the spark of curiosity that I am letting guide me as we plunge into this world. And let me say right up front that I am learning right along with you. Don't take me for an expert. I am, you know, I know more, a little more than the average bear about this stuff, but I'm really just starting at the beginning, and curiosity is really what we're here to pursue. So that's the basic idea of the show. I have so much more to say, but let's talk about the music before we go any further. So those first tracks you heard, that last one was The Deep of the Universe by Magical Ring from the album More and More on the Derby label from 1977. That's an Italian label releasing music by what seems to be a French group. The thing I love about that one is it comes in so hot and like heavy, and they build up all this wonderful tension, and it feels like has like kind of a swagger to it, and then they just throw it away in like the change up of the from the first section to the second one. They do it a couple times. It just cracks me up, but the good parts are good. Before that was Morning Quiet Song by Lawrence Venet from the album Evening Colors on the CAM label, 1977. Again, an Italian label releasing a French artist. Lawrence Venet is a pseudonym for Jacqueline Thibault, one of the few women working in this space, at least that I've come across so far. She seemed to use quite a few pseudonyms, especially early in her career, but has continued releasing music all the way up to the present day. She also seems to have been really active in music education in southwestern France. Pretty interesting. I'm sure we will do like an artist profile on her at some point. I love so much of her music. Before that was Space Line by Joel van Drogenbroek and Mark Monson from the deliciously titled album California Industrial and Scenic Moods on Color Sound Library from 1988. That's a German label. And Mark Monson is, here's another pseudonym. It's a pseudonym for Gunter Grafenius, who was, if not the founder, one of the founders of the Color Sound Library. Prepare to hear about Color Sound quite a bit. It's far and away has the highest hit rate of any label I've looked into so far. In fact, the first song, our opener, Wide Open Space Motion by Klaus Weiss from the album Open Space Motion Underscores, was also on Color Sound Library from 1981. Klaus Weiss, interesting guy, seems to have had a long and storied jazz career. He's a drummer, German drummer, who I guess he got his start when American jazz musicians would tour Europe. They wanted someone who could imitate American jazz drumming, and he was very good at that. And then he went on to organize and front groups in his own right. And then at some point seems to have shifted into library music. I couldn't really find any explanation for the transition or any, there don't seem to be any transitional works. He just suddenly started making this, like, some of the best library stuff I've come across. So very interested to learn more about him. Exactly the kind of person I want to dig into more and just get the story on. So that's what you heard. Let me tell you what you're about to hear. This next one is near and dear to my heart. If you, like me, were lucky enough to be a Sesame Street kid in the late 80s or early 90s, you might know this one. This is Richard Harvey with Exchange. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back. This is Signals and Bridges. So that last one was Una Storia di Spy by Luciano Simoncini from the album Immagini No. 2, 1974 on Panda Records out of, you guessed it, Italy. Luciano Simoncini, I've just learned, I was just looking into it while listening, was behind a group called Arawak, which I think I've actually got a track from them lined up later on. I thought it was two different folks, but it's the same guy, I guess. A much sampled group, Arawak. Before that was Results No. 2 by Andreas Lonardoni from High Tech, from 1991 on the Color Sound Library. This is an interesting one. This album is like 47 tracks long or something, and many of them are, it's long because there are many duplicates, and they're slightly different versions of the same compositions. And typically it's like one has a prominent drum track, and then the other version has the drum track dropped out, and then maybe a third with something else dropped out, just, you know, so people can choose what they like. But in so many cases, like, I love the version with the drum track, and then the next track is the one without the drum track, and it sounds so much more interesting without, you know, the prominent backbeat, which I have to say parallels an experience I've had many times as a musician working on recording projects, where you're working on a song and you've added many layers and you're sort of adding more ornament and it feels more and more exciting. And then because you're working on some part of it, you might mute a track or a couple tracks, you might suddenly take out of the mix what seemed like an important element, and suddenly these other elements that are left in seem clearer and profound, and it tends to be this exciting moment in the middle of mixing something, but then you kind of cave and just put the stuff back in that you had muted, and it ends up being the fully ornamented thing. But it's nice to have these iterations on these records where you can kind of hear that in full. Before that was A Simple Souvenir by Alessandro Alessandroni from the album Romance and Drama, 1980 on Color Sound. Alessandro Alessandroni was a childhood friend and frequent collaborator with the famous Italian composer of spaghetti Western soundtracks, Ennio Morricone. Apparently most of the prominent guitar melodies and whistling, that's this guy, that's Alessandro. I think it's really interesting that someone could work so closely with such a force of nature as Ennio Morricone, and I think he manages to really retain his own voice in his own solo stuff. I've checked out a lot of his stuff, and it's very clear when it's one of his tracks. Also, I should mention, the album Romance and Drama is just like a textbook case of a library album, in that it's very explicitly intended for film or works that are involving like relationships. And I mean, you could use this music for other stuff, but the intent of the album is clearly dictated in the track names, like Dramatic Encounter, First Approaches, Agitation, Dialogues, Ultimatum, Reflections, Noble Feelings. I really like how there's kind of a vague story implied by the track names on a lot of these albums. We'll get into more of that as we go. Before that was Mission Controller by Astral Sounds from the album Teletext, 1982, on the label Rouge out of the UK. Astral Sounds, a French group, I believe. Their first two albums are like really meandering. Like, some of the tracks just kind of sound like someone switched on a synthesizer for the first time and just kind of messing around. And then this, I think it's the third album, is Teletext. They just like really hit the ground, and it's just way more compelling. The melodies are better. It's wonderful. And we started off with Exchange by Richard Harvey from the album, my favorite album name maybe, Nifty Digits, from 1980 on KPM out of the UK. Richard Harvey has gone on to have a very seemingly successful film soundtrack career. He's worked on some prominent films. But what I love about his early stuff, like early 80s, is he is like running circles around anyone else I've yet encountered in library stuff in terms of like the density of his arrangements. It's so carefully mixed. Everything is interlocking in a really interesting way. Apparently, he's a renowned mandolin player. He features that instrument in really unexpected ways. I love his bass playing. We're definitely doing a Richard Harvey episode. He has some videos up on YouTube from a few years ago where he's actually breaking down like track by track. So I think it's some of the stuff from Nifty Digits. Maybe it's delusions of grandeur, but maybe someday we could like get him on the show. I don't know. It's a dream I have. I would love to talk to Richard Harvey. a little more about the show while I've got you here. So just a little bit about me, I guess, like why I'm here and why this stuff is interesting to me. So I found my way to library music via kind of a long path. I had sort of a narrow scope of music listening when I got into my college years, and I got into college radio, which greatly widened my horizons. And later on, I made some friends and had some bandmates who I was very fortunate to meet, and they were much further along in their music journey than I was. And this was pre-streaming. They were very skilled at finding obscure things, and I greatly benefited from trading mixes with them and just like hanging out, driving around in the car and sharing songs with each other. And yeah, like I say, it was pre-streaming, so these tracks were expressly like rare and obscure. And there was sort of a mythical quality about them. Like, this was really before people were like en masse uploading songs to YouTube, where everything was pretty easy to find. This was like, if I remember one time I had a hard drive fail and I like lost a lot of music that was very important to me that I had gotten secondhand, and some of it was library music. I think the way library music was initially introduced to me was like, oh, it's kind of stock music and it gets sampled in hip hop a lot, but the music itself is actually very good. And so hip hop is like a way you can kind of find your way into this world, like who sampled what and that kind of thing. And so now streaming has arrived, and because this music is owned by music libraries who are in the business of making money with the music that they have, a lot of it is on streaming services. I think almost all of this episode is available on streaming services, which is pretty cool because it sort of democratizes finding and enjoying this music, which it's very expensive to collect this stuff. So I don't know. I think it's rarity is no longer a thing when it's on the internet, and obscurity is just a matter of being pointed in the right direction to find the good stuff. And so, you know, why this show then? If I can just find it on streaming services, why not just do that? Well, you could, but in my experience so far, the hit rate is very low on this stuff, as I mentioned earlier. So there is like a big piece of work to be done to sift through and find the good stuff. And so I think there's value there, and hopefully you do too. And a thing that I like very much about the sifting process and listening to a lot of mediocre stuff to find the good stuff is that as a musician myself, it kind of parallels the creative process, or at least my creative process, which is that you have to get a lot of bad or mediocre stuff out before the good stuff comes out. And it's really cool to me that these people were committing so much to tape, you know, kind of taking a volume over quality approach, I guess, in some cases. But they're kind of recording their whole creative process, and it's really wonderful to kind of hear an artist straining for something and not really getting there track after track. And then all of a sudden you hit track 8 and it's just magical. They found it. I just feel such a kinship with those people. And I think, you know, even non-musicians, anyone who does creative work, that's, you know, you do a lot of bad stuff and then suddenly you find the good thing. Anyway, let's move along. The next set is going to start off with Mary Go Sound, good one, by Pierre Dutour et son orchestre. Wow, train wreck. Yeah, here it is. Enjoy. Thank you. welcome again to Signals and Bridges. At the end of the show here, that last one was Spheres version A by Keith Mansfield from the album Planet Earth / All in the Mind, 1980 on KPM out of the UK. It's another one of those albums that there's two or three versions of each track. There's a lot of sort of meditative, expansive stuff in this area. I want to do like a meditation sort of episode every once in a while. I don't know. We'll see. Before that was Londra 1965 by Arawak from the album literally titled Background Music Number 4, 1979 on Titian Records out of Italy. Before that was Data Load by Otakar Olsanik and Jen Martis from the album AV Motion / Advanced Process. Love it. 1989 on Color Sound out of Germany. Before that was Dominique and Darina by Garnegie et Mathieu from the album Sport Music 2, 1983 on Carrère out of France. Lots of good track names on Sport Music 2. We will be hearing from that album again. I think one is called Musculation. There's definitely one called Biceps. Before that was On Se Temps La by Pierre Harvé. I'm really sorry, Francophones. I got to work on it. I could do Italian sort of okay, but French is challenging for me. I'm going to work on it. From the album, the beautifully titled Cross Through Yesterday and Present Day, which I briefly considered as a title for this show. 1973 on CBS Records out of France. I think it's like CBS, as in like the American broadcasting company, CBS. And we started off the set with Mary Goes Sound by Pierre Dutour et son orchestre. I think that was a little better. Dance and Mood Music, Volume 19 from 1972 on Chappelle out of France. So yeah, I mean, Volume 19 gives you a sense of just the depth of catalog we have to pull from. There's so much to listen to. I'm going to be working hard to find the good stuff and bring it to you. So yeah, at the end of the show, I do have one more song for you, which I'll tell you about in a moment, but just a little more, I guess, brass tacks. Like, what can you expect going forward from this show? I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard so far. This is definitely like a variety pack mix. I'm just trying to sort of give you an introductory sense of the sorts of sounds we'll be exploring. I hope you like it. I'm thinking it's going to be a bi-weekly show. We'll see how that schedule goes. This is just sort of a hobby thing. A lot of stuff going on, like a job and being a dad, but I'm hoping I can stick to a bi-weekly schedule. We'll see. Like I say, most episodes will be a variety pack, kind of like this one, but I think I do want to do some artist profile episodes, maybe like a label profile episode, and as I mentioned, the meditation episode idea. I don't know. We'll shake it up a little bit. We'll see where it takes us. I'm just beginning to learn where to find information about the artists and kind of get some backstory on this stuff. So I'm sure, you know, we'll just keep pushing, learn a little more each episode. And after a while, I'm sure we'll start getting familiar with some patterns and learning more about how this stuff got made. And last of all, just want to, this is where I ask you to smash that like. There's no like in podcasting, but if you could please subscribe to the show. I'm going to keep making it, as I said. If you've enjoyed this, and I hope you have, tell a friend. I'm not going to mess with social media for this show. I'm just going to make it and let it be a word of mouth thing. If you've enjoyed it, send it to somebody who you think might also enjoy it. Some credits for you. Today's signal, by which I mean the little sound at the top of the show, was Signals and Bridges in Music 107 by Heinz Funk. And I didn't really address the name of the show. I guess that's a topic for the next episode. And today's bridges for the show, by which I mean the music playing in the background during the breaks, were cuts from the album Pleasure Trip by Al Sigmund. The show is vetted, researched, fretted over, and mixed with love by me, Luke Brevoort. The website for my sound work is splendorsound.com, and you can email me at luke@splendorsound.com. I've got one more for you. I have an idea that I'm going to try, at least for a while, that the last song of the show should kind of feel like an end credits moment. And as a listener, you can envision some sort of visual to go with this, the end of a movie or something like that. Or maybe the music, wherever you're listening to this, makes you feel like you are in the end credits of a movie that you're the star of. And I don't know, when I listen to some tracks, it makes me think of like where I am in my life and achievements I've had recently. And, you know, it's nice to have a soundtrack to that kind of thing. So I don't know, maybe think of a thing that you're proud of that you did recently or that you're working hard on now, and let this one walk you out in a celebratory mood. But yeah, here is Free Fall by Francis Monkman from the album Pictures in the Mind, 1978 on KPM out of the UK. This is Signals and Bridges. I have been Luke Brevoort. Talk to you next time. We'll be right back.